Love it.
Blog Talk Radio.
And you're on, Ray.
Okay, good. Good morning.
Jeff will be on.
I'm sorry?
No, I said Jeff will be on. It's just a problem in the Philippines right now.
Yeah, okay.
We know he's up and aware because we've been talking with him. So.
Okay, great. So I'll just I'll get started until he chimes in, and he can roll from his end. Yeah. So today is Tuesday, October 2nd at 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is where I am, and we're going to be talking about some vegan myths today, and hopefully we will dispel some of those or all of those for everyone. And, you know, it's just something to think about when you are thinking about going vegan or, you know, making a transition, is that your body knows best.
Right.
And,
right.
It really does.
There's Jeff. Yeah, so we've got it.
Okay, good.
So your body definitely has wisdom.
How are we doing, folks?
It does.
We're glad to see you.
How are you doing, Ruthann?
I am great. It's a lovely autumn morning here.
Is it really? Are you telling the truth?
I really am.
Tell me the temperature there, and then I'll be able to tell you if you're telling me the truth.
Okay, smarty. 56 degrees.
Yeah, that's actually not too bad.
Yeah.
It's a little hot here in the Philippines by comparison, I got to tell you. It was humid as heck today.
That humidity, that's interesting.
How are you doing, Ray?
I'm doing good. We're having a heat wave here as well on the West Coast. So
excellent.
It's been very warm.
You know, think about it. There's always a benefit to a heat wave, and I experienced it this morning. We're getting a little bit of a late start here again, so we may as well just jump right into it. Is that all right with you too?
Yeah.
I was already chatting away when you called in. Yeah.
Talk about the myth.
All right. Excellent.
Without naming any.
So normally I'd start out by saying welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Of course, everybody listening knows that we're there already. October 2nd, 2012, I'm Jeff Sikarik of thesuperfitvegan.com, and that's Ray Whitney of rawgirlfriend.com. And this is the show where we talk all things related to the vegan lifestyle and developing a super high level of fitness. And today, Ray and I are going to be talking about what we believe are the top doubts or myths surrounding the superfit vegan lifestyle. And these are myths to which far too many, I believe, still subscribe, even if they adopted this lifestyle maybe for a few weeks. And if you've been a physically fit plant eater for a while, you've likely heard a lot of these. And Ray, you remember we touched on a few of these this week and a little bit last week on the show. Myths such as protein. Will I get enough on plant foods alone? What about calcium for bones? Don't I need that for bone strength? I'm sure you've heard that one as many times as I have.
Mm-hmm.
What about blood sugar problems? That's another big one. Hey, if I eat all this fruit, if I'm trying to get most of my calories on a raw vegan diet from fruit, won't I come down with blood sugar problems? Another one we touched on a bit last week was, what about teeth on the raw vegan diet? Are they just going to fall out? That's a common myth out there, believe it or not. And on the exercise side of it, shouldn't I lift weights for strength and run for cardio? The short answer to that one is no, and we'll get into a little bit more detail on that as I believe there's a better way to do it, better way to go with regard to your exercise regimen than the traditional lift weight for strength and running for cardio. And after we cover a few of these, we'll also get into, if we have time, why, after all this time, it's been how many years since John Robbins wrote Diet for a New America, since the vegan diet was really shown scientifically to be a valid way to not only survive, but to thrive as an athlete. Well, after all this time, we still have these myths coming up, don't we, Ray?
Yes, we do. And what I was saying before you logged on was that our body knows best. And, you know, it will reset when you go to a vegan diet. It sort of goes back to, you know, the memory of, you know, that purity that we had so long ago. So I definitely believe that these are myths and hope we can dispel all of them for people out there that want to be vegan and live a plant-based diet, because they're all just, well, for lack of a better word, silly. So, yeah, definitely. There are so many come up every day over and over again. So we're living proof that they are myths. Yeah.
I agree with you. They are silly. I agree with you there. But, and this is a big but, I remember, and you probably do too also, Ray, that, you know, when I first started 20 years ago, after I read Anthony Robbins' book, Awaken the Giant Within, and I read Diamonds Fit for Life, I'm like, whoa, this is great. You know, I can't believe it. I've never heard of this before, this information on the vegan diet. And yet, I was so conditioned since the time I was a little boy to link pleasure in my nervous system to meat, and so addicted to it that there was a strong sense, even after I had the knowledge that the vegan diet was a good way to go, I still had some hesitation about it because I've been so conditioned to think, hey, I need calcium for bone strength and protein for muscle growth. So I went through a time when over 20 years ago, when I would eat fruits and vegetables and eat a vegan diet during the day, and then at night I'd find myself like on a weightlifter. I was drinking like these protein powders, whey for protein, as
right.
when you grow
right.
muscle. So as my point of this is, to us, they seem silly. We've been doing this for a while. But I have to remind myself, always not to be, attempt to be superior or condescending. That would be the last thing I would do, because I remember how when I first started on the vegan diet, how wrapped up I was in the whole protein issue.
Right. I remember, I've been vegan for about 3.5 years, and I remember early on I was concerned. I wouldn't say worried, but I was concerned, like, is this all there is to it? I mean, you're right, we're conditioned to think we need more. And it took a while to get over that, you know, to rethink and approach the whole food topic, you know. And then I just noticed I was feeling so much better. And
I think that was
proof in the pudding, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that that is brilliantly said, that the way that you said, is this all there is? Because we're so conditioned as just through every area of society that if it is not something outside of ourselves, then it can't be legitimate. A good example would be like barefoot running. And minimalist shoe running. I run in nothing but sandals now, homemade sandals for about $2 a pair. And remember, this barefoot running craze didn't really take off until Vibrams hit the marketplace. So all these years, you didn't need anything but your bare feet and a few dollar pair of sandals. But guess what? it wasn't legitimate until there was a product. So,
right.
In other words, that illustrates what you just mentioned, which was that, hey, your soul or your heart, your intuition, which is in 99% of the time, if you really think about it over the course of your life, what is accurate? Your mind, which tries to work its way around a problem, or your intuition, your heart, and your soul? Your heart and your soul has known all this time things like, hey, it doesn't take a lot for me to be healthy. When I was a little kid, did I worry about supplements? Did I worry about what kind of shoe I had on? No, I just ran out the door and exercised, didn't have to question it. It just seems that as we progress in life and as the corporate marketing machines work on you and work on you and work on you through TV, and you can't discount all the drugs and processed foods people are eating, that's got to cloud their judgment. We know that. But as time goes on, you see, people get the idea that, boy, I've got to be dependent on something, when in fact all along I think what you said is true, which is this all there is? Yeah, that really is all there is. It's about taking things away and eliminating toxins much more so than adding something in to make this thing
right.
work.
We've talked about this before, how society is programmed that more is better, and having more is better, and eating more is better, and supersize me is better, and more bang for the buck, and there's all these messages out there. When in fact, less is more, and taking things away, you want to take things out of your diet, you need to take things out, not add things in.
Yeah, all that stuff you're adding in coagulates in the digestive tract. Obviously not the Vibram running shoes, but hey, it just illustrates the point that just another marketing gimmick that you don't need.
Right.
So let's go ahead and get into these. I thought I'd cover a little bit on protein, Ray, then you can comment on that from your experience.
Yeah.
Then I'll let you get into the dairy issue, because I know that was a big one, a big question you get all the time. So I'm interested to hear your take on that one. But I thought that I'd start out with the protein by just reading a blurb that out of my book, The Superfit Vegan, which is available at thesuperfitvegan.com. And it's a little piece I wrote in here called "You Crazy Vegan Nuts, Where's the Protein?" And yes, I've actually been asked that question in that exact way, in an additional variety of ways. And as I said, I'm not saying that it is not a valid concern. Yes, it's an issue with which I also was concerned when I first embarked on a 100% plant-based diet. I continue. What I found, however, is that it is a damn near totally unfounded concern. Yes, meat and dairy producers would have you believe that if you go a single meal without a slice of flesh or a large glass of hormone and drug-filled toxic milk, you might just fall over and not get up. That's not true in my experience, not by a long shot. And if you read, of course, both you and I have read Dr. Graham's 80-10-10 diet. He proves in that book, beyond a reasonable doubt, I'd say, that humans require about 6 to 10% of our calories to come from protein. He's not the first one that's made that contention. I think he's just made a good case of it in that book. Now, that stands to reason, as growing infants designed to thrive and grow on their mother's milk alone, it would seem to me would need a bit more protein than, for example, an already full-grown adult. And you know what the percentage of protein is in mother's milk? It's about 6%. So the point is this. A protein deficiency is non-existent as long as you're consuming enough fruits and vegetables from a caloric standpoint to meet your needs. Plant foods are loaded with plenty of protein. Just a few examples I've written down here are 1 pound of kale, which is available at almost every grocery store in the world, has more protein than is recommended by the USDA USDA per day. Apricots and honeydew melons are about 10% protein. And remember, we only need about 6 to 10% protein to, even if you're an athlete, to live a vibrantly healthy life. Most people know cucumbers are 11% protein, tomatoes about 12%, asparagus 27%, broccoli is 20% protein. So the point is, we could go on and on here. We've talked about these, Ray. And most fruits are 5 to 8% protein. The bottom line is, when everything is said and done, is if you're eating plenty of raw fruits and vegetables, it's going to be hard as hell, if not impossible, for you to come down with a protein deficiency. And I can tell you this for a fact. I was thinking about this morning when I woke up and did my workout, which is about 600 squats, push-ups, and crunches, and a six-mile run throughout a park here this morning. No problem. I've been doing it for years. Believe me, I've been doing it for years. I would have broken down a long time ago if there was a protein problem. The silverback gorilla is about 30 times stronger than a man. Where does he get his protein? Fruits and leaves. Think about it. Oxes, horses, camels, elephants, rhinoceroses, these are some of the most impressive animals on earth, and they all get their protein from plants. To paraphrase Diamond in Fit for Life, it would be a little bit weird if all of these impressive, super strong animals get all the protein they need from fruit and leaves and plant foods. Wouldn't it be a little weird that humans would have such a tough time of it doing the same? I'd say yes, wouldn't you, right?
Yes, I would. Yeah, I get that question a lot. I need my protein, or, you know, I'm active, where do I get my protein, you know, whatever. And my standard answer is dark leafy greens. And people just can't believe that that's all you need. And I just tell them I'm living proof that you don't need anything more. It's a myth. Don't succumb to this, because, you know, they're, like you were saying, you're just programmed with the media and early on, you know, that you need meat and, you know, dairy. It's just not true. It's just not true. So get, and you're, I mean, look at, you're, you know, the epitome of health, you know, so, and every vegan that I meet feels the same way. I mean, they just feel great, look great, they're turning back the aging clock, and they just agree, you know, that you don't need the animal flesh to feel good.
You know, you kind of have to remind yourself, when you start looking deeper into this information, when you start looking at the historical behavior of meat and dairy companies, which, by the way, if you're wondering who invented the four food groups, guess who? They did. Meat, dairy.
Yeah.
Back when they first started to get a stranglehold on Congress to establish the four food groups by bribing government officials, lobbying, of course, a de facto bribe, remember, very little was known in the late 40s, early 50s, back when this stuff was being established. Very little was known, really, about nutrition. Just the idea of vitamins and minerals was just starting to gain a little bit of traction in the scientific community. So, you know, it's often been said that you can take advantage of the chaos, and I'll tell you, I got to give them credit for that, if you can call it credit. The meat and dairy industry is, if anybody ever took advantage of a chaotic situation, it was those psychotic mass murderers who just basically lobbied and bribed and did whatever they had to do to convince humanity, and the U.S. in particular, that meat and dairy were necessary. And they had a hard time proving it, actually, if you go back and look at it and you do a little bit of research on it. But they found that, hey, the one thing that meat and dairy was prevalent in was protein. So is it an accident, do you think, that all these years later, after their billions and billions of dollars of bribing and lobbying and marketing and corporatizing and inculcating young children that this stuff is necessary, is it any wonder that people still have in their minds at a collective level that protein is such an important element to human life?
No.
I'd say that's a bit more than coincidence. They did it. They did it to humanity. And yes, humanity was stupid and dumb and brainwashed enough. TV didn't help. The introduction of TV into every home in the country didn't help. But it takes two to make this happen. So humans, man as a collective whole, can blame meat and dairy companies. Hopefully that day will come. They can blame the meat and dairy companies all they want. But that excuse is getting harder and harder to put up with as more and more with the internet and great books out like Botanko's Green for Life and Dr. Graham's book, that excuse is getting to be harder and harder to get away with, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would. And, I mean, just look at that box in the corner. I mean, what a powerful tool. People turn that on just without even thinking. They have it. I know people that have it on just for background noise. And look at all those messages that are coming across. They continue, to pound the public with this misinformation. So I don't watch TV myself, but the last, way back when, I remember one of those beef ads was meat, it does a body good. I think that was their tagline. So,
now, Hold on a second. Wasn't that beef, it's what's for dinner, and milk, it does a body good? I think you got
it. Oh, you're
it
right. Beef, it's what's for dinner. Yeah, yeah. So I'm just saying, they continue to pound people over and over and over again. And there's that.
Yeah, they.
The flicker.
Go ahead.
Okay, what I'm going to say is, we've talked about this, the flicker from the television. Puts you into that catatonic state, sort of hypnotizes you, and then everything coming across gets you subconsciously. So that's why that box in the corner is so dangerous. So it just...
Yeah, I don't... I agree totally, and the scary part is, even over here in the Philippines, where a lot of the country is not as advanced as Western society, I'm seeing it really does prove that the rest of the world takes a cue in so many important ways from Western culture. And when I was up in Angeles City, I couldn't help it. I'd be going to this health food store they have up here called Healthy Options, which, by the way, is a really good store in the Philippines, kind of like Sunflower Market in Vegas. Remember that one?
Yeah, that was a great store. Yeah.
Great store. Similar to that. If you're ever in Vegas, go to Sunflower Market. It's like Whole Foods, but cheaper. Anyway, here, to get to Healthy Options, I go by in the mall in Angeles City. I have to go by McDonald's. So I'm subjected not only to the smell of death when I go by that place, but I'm also subjected to the local populace, which seems to enjoy taking photographs of their children hugging the waving Ronald McDonald there, big statue of him.
The horror
and,
of it all.
Yeah, the horror of it all. That really goes to show you that how inculcated the rest of society is from Western culture, and rather disturbing.
Yeah, talk about branding. You know what I mean? Jeez.
I wanted to mention before I forget on that protein issue, there was a push by the meat and dairy corporations probably about 10 years ago it started, where they started talking, well, you don't get the full range of amino acids in fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds as you do in meat and dairy. It turns out that is totally inaccurate. There are actually 23 essential amino acids that we know of. 15 of those are produced by our bodies. 8 of those you've got to get from food. Now, those eights can all be found in a variety of fruits and vegetables. And in fact, as Diamond notes in Fit for Life, there are many fruits and vegetables that contain all eight of the essential amino acids that aren't produced by our body. Examples: kale, which you mentioned, cucumbers, okra, peas, tomatoes, bananas, cabbage, and all nuts. So this idea, you hear it at the gym occasionally. Well, you need meat protein. Actually, no, you don't now. Now it's case closed. We know for a fact that every single amino acid that you need to build healthy muscle tissue and healthy bones is readily available. All those amino acids are readily available in fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds.
Oh, here's one for you, Jeff, on the protein issue. You know, people say to me all the time, but wait, we have canines to tear meat. That comes up a lot. What do you say to them? You have a good answer for that one.
Well, you've got canines for teeth. I think it's a little bit more important the length of your digestive tract. There are, yes, you've got those tiny little canines. However, we've got 30 physiological characteristics that distinguish us from meat eaters. So you've got those tiny little canines. However, you lack a snout for tearing flesh. You have a bipedal nature. All carnivores move around on four legs. We thrive on an alkaline, a fruit and vegetable alkaline diet, whereas a meat eater thrives on an acidic diet. A dog, a cat, a lion, they've got a very short 4 to 5 foot long digestive tract. Herbivores, plant eaters, natural plant eaters like us, gorillas, we have a long digestive tract, about 20 to 30 feet long, depending on the individual species. But all of these creatures like us that thrive on an alkaline diet and not an acidic, when we start eating meat, it rots in the digestive tract and stalls. That doesn't happen with a carnivore with a short digestive tract. So you can point to those canines. However, there's no getting around the also, very importantly, we're not designed to track and kill prey. We're not fast enough. We've got opposable thumbs designed for picking fruit. It's not in our nature physiologically to track down and kill prey. So I'd say that when you boil down those 30 physiological characteristics and then couple that with the fact that if you take cultures that have adopted a processed food and meat-based diet, they all get cancer and heart disease, as proven in the China study. If you take cultures that thrive on, that adopt a fruit and vegetable diet and a plant-based diet, they do not get those illnesses. So I think with the preponderance of evidence, when it's all said and done, I'd say that those two little canines in your teeth are a far cry from justification to adopt a meat-based diet.
Yeah, good. No, that comes up a lot. You know, the meat eaters, you know, they stand up and say, "Wait, I have canines. I need to eat meat." So you know, to mention everything you just did to dispel that. That comes up a lot.
You've got to think about it. Remember that Dr. Alan Walker at Johns Hopkins University was able to identify from the teeth striations, teeth markings, every single skeleton that we've pulled up out of the ground from the leading up to the Homo erectus, us basically, 12 million years before that, he identified as a fruit eater, and no exceptions have been found. So if you have to think of it logically, if meat and animal protein were so important to humans, first off, why are we not physiologically adapted to go get it? We couldn't chase down, sprint down an animal on our best day. We couldn't tear it with our snouts. We don't have the digestive tract to deal with it. So if it's that important, why did Mother Nature not physiologically adapt us to go get it? Doesn't make any sense. Right. Why did our ancestors not? Why were they fruit eaters, as proven by Johns Hopkins, Dr. Alan Walker? Why did they not eat it if it's so important? And furthermore, why is it linked to every single chronic illness known to man, per the China study? I think it's pretty much case closed when you look at all of that information. And I have not yet talked to any reasonable human being that's got 500 brain cells to rub together, when they looked at the preponderance of evidence, did not come up with the same conclusion that I have.
Right.
Onward. What about, you get the question cheese, don't you?
I got
the
question.
Quite a bit?
Yes, I do. I got it as early as yesterday. I talked to a guy. He said he was a vegetarian. And I said, well, good for you. And I said, when you learn about how your body processes foods, being plant-based is just the way to go. And, for ultimate health. And he said, well, I'm thinking about it, but I could, quote, never give up cheese. So I got to talking to him about that, letting him know that it does create constipation. It's very hard to digest. And he should definitely think about opting out of the cheese intake. So it does open up conversation. So I think that's good because I can lift people's awareness. But I remember talking to you so long ago before I went vegan, and we were talking about my dairy intake, and I was a big yogurt head. I mean, I ate yogurt every single day, once, if not twice. I mean, I just love the stuff. And maybe soy milk or something like that. I wasn't a big milk drinker, but, dairy would come up occasionally. Occasional egg, you go out for brunch or breakfast, it's eggs, bacon, toast, and I can opt out of the bacon with fruit, but it's still eggs are there. So it just took examining the dairy aspect of my life and then cutting it out. And I knew I could live without eggs. That wasn't a big sacrifice. And the soy milk, of course, that's easy to get rid of. But I got to tell you that yogurt, yogurt with my friend, okay? So I had to decide to part ways with that friend. And I'm so glad I did, because I felt better immediately. I mean, this was like 2 days into it. I was like, wow. I mean, I just felt great. I mean, I was like, I can't believe I don't need yogurt. It was definitely an addictive thing. So I think that's
now,
the same can be said for cheese. I think people are just addicted to it, It's a comfort food something. You know what I'm saying? It's comfort food. It's emotional. We talked about this a lot. The emotional aspect of eating. It's huge, and I think that's what the media plays on, the emotional side of it.
Remember also, and I'm looking at, I remember this being your, now it's all coming back to me now, because I wrote a blog on this called Is Cheese Safe? My answer to a question posed on Facebook on this issue. And this is back in 2009 when I first met you and we first started talking about this, and I remember you, this was kind of your last hurdle. This
right.
ought to bring back – listen to this, Ray. Is cheese safe? My answer to a question posed on Facebook. My answer, probably not. I just listened to a bit of an interview with Dr. Neil Barnard, head of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Barnard claims that dairy products latch onto the same receptor cells in the brain as do heroin and cocaine. This, he contends, is why so many vegetarians and vegans have a problem overcoming that final hurdle in their quest for a natural diet, cutting out cheese. There's that, and he forgot one other thing. It's a dense source of calories. And I'm seeing that in the Philippines. Even the poor people here, or the poor people for that matter in America, now the psychotic corporations that rule the world with an iron fist have doctored things and made the situation such that it's more expensive to get that which should be free, fruits and vegetables, it's more expensive to do that than it is to go get a burger or a glass of milk or an ice cream cone, a dense source of calories. So, yeah, this stuff is totally addicting. And guess what? It's a dense source of calories. So if you're poor, there's almost no choice but to eat the garbage. And on top of it, the fruit, the Monsantos of the world have insured, and if you doubt this, go to the Philippines where the produce is not great quality. They've insured that children will not eat produce. You know why? Because the genetically modified stuff tastes like garbage.
Right.
So you add all that up, and you know, the cheese, it's addictive to the brain, latches onto the same receptors as heroin and cocaine. And another point on that dairy, which I wrote about in that blog, it's interesting. In Fit for Life, Diamond makes a compelling case that humans should not be consuming the milk of another species, as no other mammal in the world does that. You know, a lot of people don't think of that. That
right.
Once weaned, no one, and also, not only does one animal never drink the milk of another species, once they're grown, they do not ever consume milk again at all. So you think about that, I guess it would be a bit strange to view in a natural setting a human being actually crawling underneath a cow for a calcium-rich snack. So you think about it logically, it doesn't make any sense. Milk turns into a semi-solid in your digestive tract. In many ways, it's worse than meat. It forms a coating on your digestive tract that interferes with the digestion of fruits and vegetables. And on top of it, incidentally, great sources of calcium are raw nuts, dates, leafy greens, prunes, figs, greens like kale, lamb's quarters. Those things are all loaded with protein. Sesame seeds, raw sesame seeds are the highest, not protein, I meant calcium. Raw sesame seeds are the highest calcium food on earth. So, you know, if you're worried, if you're just switching to a diet, a vegan diet, and you're worried about the calcium issue, it very much goes hand in hand with the protein. If you're eating enough fruits and vegetables, it's going to be virtually impossible to come down with a calcium deficiency.
Yeah, I just want to say here that we can get along and thrive on so little. It boggles the mind. Even if we're both very active people, we eat as much as we want. It really isn't that much if you look at it like on a plate or, you know, on a table. You know, we can take pictures of our, you know, pantry, so to speak. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, you don't need a lot. I think it's just overcoming that programming. That you need these, you know, enormous meals and three times a day. And, you know, the average person they just don't need it. You just have to stop. So this is part of the reason why I wrote the book that I did, How I Lost 50 Pounds on the Raw Food Diet, because there's a journal in there, a 30-day journal, to go raw, to be mindful of what you're eating. That was part of my motivation to just show people, illustrate to people that you do not need what you think you have been consuming all this time. You just don't. You just don't.
That ties in. That really does. That brings up another point, which another myth that you'll still hear occasionally is, you know, a raw vegan diet, boy, I would be hungry all the time on something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And first off, that doesn't really happen because you can eat as much as you want. Pretty much eat as many fruit and vegetables as you want without gaining unhealthy weight. Also, if you're doing that, you get a lot more nutrient-packed food in each bite than you do from processed foods or meats.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that you're always going to be hungry, that is not true. You can actually get by on a lot less.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
So what do we got? We got protein. We've covered calcium. We talked a little bit about teeth on the raw vegan diet last week, and we talked about Western prices work with regard to teeth and indigenous cultures that have been researched that did not have access to the Western diet before the white man got there, had pristine teeth. And then after they adopted a heavy sugar-based processed food diet, their teeth all went to hell. So that, what does that tell us? It tells me that a teeth issue emanates from deep inside. And we found that to be true, both you and I. I don't have any teeth problems with a raw vegan diet. So I think that that is another big myth that you hear thrown around raw vegan circles, at least. You know, your teeth are going to fall
out.
That's just not true.
What else do I have about supplements? Why don't we talk about supplements quickly? Just address that. That comes up a lot.
Yeah, we've got about 20 minutes here, and I wanted to get into why these myths exist still, which we can get into a little bit next. But the supplement issue, I do take a whole food-based supplement, just one, which is standard basic vitamins and minerals. The reason is that the fruit that we have and the produce that we have is not the quality likely that it was even 100 years ago, due to over-depleted soils, over-farming of soils, depleted soils. So I think it is a good idea to take a basic multivitamin, but I think anything more than that is pretty much unnecessary.
Yeah, I have actually experimented with taking of the supplement and not taking of the supplement, and I'm now not taking a supplement, and I feel fine. It's not to say that I felt any better taking it, but like you say, it's a little insurance policy against the depleted soil topic. So, you know, for me, I'm okay without it, but it doesn't come up, so it's just good to be aware of that. And again, it becomes a personal choice, I think, to just always check in with yourself. You know, how am I feeling? You know, how do I feel today? Do I feel alert and, you know, alive and, you know, energetic? You know, that's just sort of a self-check, you know, a little self-check every day, you know, a few times.
You know, the thing is, we're talking about, you think about it, we're talking about protein, dairy, and all these things that you actually need less of. And the thing is with supplements, yes, I take a whole food supplement, as you say, as an insurance policy, but it's so much overkill when you go into Whole Foods or any even health food store and you see just the plethora of vitamins, minerals, the brands, and all this different stuff, all of which is food derived from organic fruits and vegetables. So it really goes to show that entire industries spring up because of fear-based disinformation. You're going to be short on this, you're going to be short on that. And if you're, like you say, if you're eating organic fruits and vegetables, you know, you really have to, I've never noticed the difference. I do take one as an insurance policy, but same as you, you know, I've gone weeks without it, and I don't notice a difference at all.
Could I interject something about that?
Yes.
Sometimes because of different trace minerals and different things like that we may not be getting, it takes a while sometimes for your body to show you that you may be lacking in it. So I do think that the insurance policy is a good idea. That's just me.
I think it's Ruthann, I think it is a good idea. I think at the same time, it's important to remember that the healthiest, longest-lived peoples on Earth, which John Robbins talked about recently in his book called Healthy to 100, he points to all these indigenous cultures that live either in high mountains where there's a lot of fresh water or low valleys where there's a lot of fresh water, and none of them have access to anything or even remotely resembling a vitamin supplement.
Right. So, but there again, they're living in areas different from where most of us on this planet live. and
their soil should be better.
Yeah,
which is why I take one as an insurance policy. However, if you're eating a good supply of organic fruits and vegetables, it's probably not necessary. But at the cost we're talking about, a dollar or two a day, I think it's worth the stretch.
Yeah.
So, Ray, what's your opinion? We've got about, 15 minutes here. Why would you say most of these myths after it's been all this time since, many years since Diet for a New America came out? We've got films like Earthlings showing the horrors of where meat and dairy come from. We know from the China study and from many other studies that you don't need meat to be strong and healthy. Why do these myths, why are they still so prevalent?
Well, my opinion may not be a popular one, but my opinion is that is peer pressure, essentially. Most people are motivated by belonging to a group. And certainly, consuming the meat and dairy that we've already established we don't need in our diet glues them together as common trait with their peers. And you see it in young kids, here, try this, kind of thing. Or do you eat that, or have you tried that, or, there's a new potato chip out or a new candy bar or something like that. But it goes all the way up to adults still. And these people, the masses, they just don't have the luxury of stepping off of that crazy train and trying a plant-based diet. It'll just rip their lives apart if they're not like their peers. So I think part of it is peer pressure, and part of it is the dumbing down of people with all the processed foods, and the box in the corner isn't helping matters much. And people are just not into thinking for themselves, questioning what they're eating. So I think it's a luxury a lot of people just will not afford themselves. This is just my take on it. So I see it over and over again with people all around me, friends and family. They're very entrenched in, the 2-for-1 special at the restaurant or whatever they're about. It's very powerful, okay, that the peer pressure, belonging, okay, it's very powerful. It's emotionally based. And they will not let themselves step off of that, even for a short period of time. I could never do that. We've heard that a million times. Well, I could never do that. You can do that. You're a strong person, but I could never do that. But actually, you could. So that's my take on why they still, they're just talking themselves out of it so they can continue to belong to their peers, their peer group. Oh, no, there you are. There you are.
No, I'm here. I think that's very accurate. That's very well said. Where do most people get their ideas from about what is reasonable? They get it from their friends, family, and coworkers who got their ideas of what is reasonable by walking into the grocery store and being inculcated and subjected to the same massive corporate advertising that created these industries. So when they are making decisions about what goes into their mouths, they're basing those decisions, they talk to their friends, family, and coworkers, and those opinions that they transfer back and forth to each other, those opinions form their basis for what they believe is reasonable. Yet, as we pointed out on this show, with regard to, for example, the protein issue, when you look at the circumstantial evidence and science behind all of it, it's not reasonable at all. It doesn't make any kind of sense when you really break it down. Yet the belonging that you talked about and the peer pressure has them making decisions that they identify as reasonable when they're actually insane. And that's unfortunate. that's unfortunate. So the best I think we can do is to have shows like this and to write books and recommend books that break that kind of conditioning. I think
And lead by example. That's all we can do.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to remind yourself also that addiction, humans get real good at justifying a behavior when it's addictive. So you've got kind of a twofold nightmare here. You've got a massive corporate advertising push to make it look like things that are not foods are actually foods. And then on top of it, to make matters worse, they're extremely addicting. And then on top of that, you can't underestimate the complacency which modern man has allowed to creep into his behavior, which we know Orwell, Huxley, Bertrand Russell, these guys who knew the score many, many years ago, all said that there would be a day that came when men would be busy watching sports and women would be busy finding out what the next fashion craze was. And they would have experts, quote-unquote experts, and elitists that would make all the major decisions. And we've gotten to that point for sure. And you can see where it's gotten, man. It's gotten to a point where he doesn't even make his own decisions about what goes into his own mouth. He's got a committee, a Congress, and a genetically, all, of course, bribed by the GMO Monsantos of the world, making his decisions on what goes into his mouth for him. So you've got the conditioning, the addiction, the complacency, as well as the fact that these myths take on a momentum of their own. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is amazing.
Bantered about the I need protein, the I need milk for strong bones, they get bantered about so often they almost take on a life separate from the consciousness of man and himself.
Right.
And so what happened is Megan mentioned this to me today that I asked her, what am I missing here? I feel like I'm missing something about these myths here and why they still exist. And she mentioned something to me that, you know, man has become so well conditioned that it would never even occur to him to question that these points that we've made on the show today are not myths. For example, that conditioning, you think about it, I think it was you, Ray, that were telling me from your experience in the medical industry that nurses just 30 or 40 years ago used to freak out when they saw a child with cancer. They would go, you're not going to believe this. Come into this room. I've never seen anything like it. And now we've gotten to a point where I'm not sure how many children have cancer, but it's a lot. And we've gotten to a point where one out of two men and women are supposed to get cancer by 2015, according to the American Cancer Society. We are at a point where the pink ribbon scam is everywhere.
Crazy.
We're at a point where they are making movies. Recently, there was a film out of Hollywood called 50/50, showing a cool kid who had cancer. So they're working real hard on conditioning the public that, hey, cancer is normal. Hey, if a cool kid has cancer and has a movie made about him and one out of two people are getting cancer, well, it's just normal.
Ooh.
Well, the fact is it is not. It's not normal. It's only recently that they've ramped up their efforts and that it's only in the last couple hundred years that this cancer thing has hit the ground really running. So now what do we do? Let's talk in the last couple of minutes here, Ray. We've only got about Ruth Ann, we got about 5 minutes or six minutes left.
This is six. Yeah.
How do we get over these myths? What's the best thing we can do if you can encapsulate that, right?
Okay, best thing we can do is there's a few things you need to do. You need to, like we said last week, empty your kitchen of everything processed and start eating a plant-based diet immediately, all out. There's no steps to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two is drink a lot of water. That goes with it. Number two is turn off that box in the corner. It is so dangerous. Mm-hmm. And number three, mm-hmm. my big one is be mindful about what you are eating. And I think just think for yourself is number four. Think for yourself. Don't be bullied mm-hmm. by your peers. You don't even have to tell them you're doing it. They offer you a piece of pie, you just say no thank you. You know, they offer you milkshake and a burger, you just say no thank you. I mean, they don't really need to know. I think there's this whole identity crisis. So you don't even have to tell anybody yep. you're doing a plant-based diet. Okay, just say no thank you, I'd rather yep. not, or I'm opting out today. They don't have to tell, you don't have to announce it. You can do it quietly. But you'll be feeling so much better. So I think those are the four for me, I would say. And get lots of exercise is number five, but that's just what we do. So.
Good advice. Yeah. I had written down here, break your conditioning. We talked all about how these corporations are so damn good at conditioning everybody, and they are. Well, how do you break that? Well, you do it by listening to shows like this and then reading the books that we've recommended, reading my book, reading Fit for Life, reading Victoria Batenko's book, Dr. Graham's. You start reading up information, and that throws a tear or a schism, a gestalt in your previous conditioning. And then what happens is you have the scientific backing and the circumstantial evidence, and then guess what you do? You plug in a movie like Earthlings, or you plug in a movie, The Original Diet for a New America, and you see what this quote-unquote food, which really isn't food at all, it's just the result of mass murder, which isn't any good for you in any way, shape, or form. What happens there is that conditioning, it's like a record. You're like a record. You scratch that thing. You scratch it back and forth, and you know what? It'll never play the same way again. So that's how you break that conditioning, with education like that. Then, as you mentioned, Ray, you set an example for yourself, and you prove it in your own body and to others that you don't need meat and dairy to be healthy, being quite the opposite, in fact. You focus on, I think, circumstantial evidence, not scientific. Megan and I were talking about this today. She had a story about somebody who wanted to convince her that dairy, you had to have dairy. Boy, and this person came up with 30 studies on the internet showing that, yep, human beings need dairy, but guess what? You can pretty much damn near prove anything you want through, phony science, depending on who's funding your study. But you know what you can't, mess with? Good circumstantial evidence, which is the length of a human digestive tract. What we're designed to consume. Cultures that drink milk and eat meat get cancer. Ones that don't do not get cancer. Animals avoid genetically modified foods, and the ones that do eat them get sick. So you focus on the circumstantial evidence. Don't nitpick over the scientific. That's going to help you a long way in getting over some of these myths. Also, you know, I think we touched on it a little bit. Remember the words of Bernard Shaw, the reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends upon the unreasonable man. What's my point there? Be unreasonable. All your friends, family, and coworkers who are all going to get fat and, you know, one out of two of them is going to get cancer by 2015 if they keep eating the standard American diet, they're the quote-unquote reasonable people in society. You got to get rid of those clowns. Be unreasonable, like Ray and I. All you got to do is read my book. I'm only partially kidding when I say that. Read my book, and I break down a lot of it, and Ray breaks down a lot of it in her book at rawgirlfriend.com. And, yeah, don't underestimate that. Don't accept what these people that think they know everything that they need to know about health and nutrition. You got to prove it to yourself and others, and don't trust other people just because you think that what they're saying is reasonable based on very shaky evidence at best. So that's my take on that. I think we're done here, Ray, right?
Yeah, I think we should. I think maybe
got 10 seconds to close it up. Yeah.
That's right. Just everyone needs to think for themselves and enjoy a plant-based diet, and they'll be in good shape. Thank you, Ruth Ann. Thank you, Joe.
Good work, folks. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.
Yep.